Hello and welcome to In Conversation With, a podcast from The Lancet Psychiatry. It's November 2023 and I'm Sophia Davis, Senior Editor at Lancet Psychiatry. And this month I am delighted to be joined by Maike Richter and Niels Opel at the University of Jena in Germany, whose new research on narcissistic traits and depressive symptoms in psychotherapy is published in our issue this month. So first of all, welcome to the podcast, both of you. Would you briefly introduce yourself so our listeners can hear who you are as we begin?
Thank you for having us. I'm Maike. I'm doing my PhD at the University of Jena, and I'm also a CBT therapist.
Yeah. Hello, everyone. I'm Niels. I'm a professor for translational psychiatry at Jena University, and I'm also a CBT therapist, and I'm very delighted to be here with you.
Thank you so much for joining us. So just to catch our listeners up on the basic outline of your paper, so your study spans different diagnoses, and you're looking at narcissistic traits in people who are receiving psychotherapy, both in inpatient clinics and outpatient treatment services. And you've been trying to assess the effect of narcissistic traits on depressive symptoms before and after therapy, just as a basic outline, so everybody knows where we're at. And to begin with, I wanted to talk about your choice to focus on narcissistic traits. This is what was really interesting to us at Lancet Psych when we saw the paper, this particular focus. And, you know, narcissism is a word that gets thrown around a lot more these days than it used to. And you're focusing on traits rather than narcissistic personality disorder. And I know there's been recently a move towards dimensionality across all personality disorders, but for any of our listeners who aren't in personality disorder research or who aren't so familiar with narcissism in general, taken precisely, could you talk about what you mean by narcissism and narcissistic traits and why you wanted to focus on that?
Narcissism generally means higher levels of grandiosity and a sense of entitlement. But it's very important to point out that this is a trait that can be found throughout the general population to varying degrees. So anyone can be placed somewhere on the narcissism spectrum. And the people we call narcissists in the media, which you just said, they just have more of that trait as part of their individual personality mixture, if you will. And the concept that Professor Mitya Buck, who is one of our senior authors, developed to differentiate subdimensions of narcissism divides it into admiration and the rivalry dimension. So people high in rivalry are competitive. They want their rivals to fail and to come out on top themselves. And people high in admiration are more self-aggrandizing. They believe that they're special and that they deserve to be recognized for their extraordinary achievements and such. So we were interested in researching narcissism in the context of psychotherapy response, first of all, because the idea that there is a distinct cutoff after which narcissism becomes detrimental and a disorder has recently been revisited by researchers and clinicians. And there has been this move towards dimensionality that you mentioned. And so far, we know very little about how dimensional narcissism affects treatment response in real-world clinical samples, that is to say, in people who are treated for any psychiatric disorder and not specifically due to personality disorders. And we therefore wanted to investigate whether we could find effects of dimensional narcissism in psychiatric samples and potentially identify predictors of treatment success. And narcissism was particularly interesting to us because narcissistic traits are associated with certain interactional patterns that we thought might be relevant for psychotherapy treatment outcomes.
Yeah. Fascinating. It's interesting to already think about those different facets of narcissism and then to really ground the research in this idea of dimensionality. And just for any listeners who aren't so familiar with this idea of dimensionality, it's, you know, this scale of severity, basically. So what you were saying about not necessarily needing to focus on this absolute cutoff point for a disorder. So you were looking at this interaction between these traits and depressive symptoms, and like you said, how it might influence outcomes in psychotherapy. Now, Niels, I know your research focuses in general on trying to optimize treatment for affective disorders like depression. So what made you decide on this particular piece of research.
Yeah, that's right. As you said, my group and I are very interested in finding potential predictors for treatment success in psychiatric disorders, particularly in affective disorders. And ideally, we want to identify factors that can easily be applied in day-to-day clinical routine to improve clinical care. And now our own clinical experience as CBT therapists has shown that treating depressive patients who appear to be more narcissistic can be more challenging, less straightforward, and often less successful. So we wanted to find empirical evidence for this anecdotal impression. And as narcissistic traits have a profound impact on social interaction, as Maike just explained, we were particularly interested in the therapeutic alliance, which is the bond between the patient and the therapist. And this relationship is very much important in psychotherapy and is often difficult to build or can become disrupted in patients with higher narcissism. So we wanted to find out how the therapeutic alliance might be related to treatment outcome in these patients in order to identify it as a potential avenue for intervention and for improving of care in depressed patients.
And of course, therapeutic alliance is known to be so important and to sort of be one of the main factors indicating success across all modalities. So I can understand why that would be so key to look at. But you had these two broad groups. As you mentioned, you were both CBT therapists and you had one group with a CBT-based treatment approach while the others had a PIT, psychoanalytic interactional therapy approach. What did you find in your comparison between these two types of therapy for people with these narcissistic traits?
Yeah, so like you already said in the introduction, we compared the effect of narcissism and those two dimensions on depressive symptoms before and after treatment between those two groups. And before treatment, the effect in both groups were uniform. So people who scored higher in admiration reported fewer depressive symptoms, while people who scored higher in rivalry were more depressed. And this pretty much mirrors previous findings from the general population, so in people who aren't mentally ill. But what is interesting is what emerged after treatment. So in the group that was treated with CBT, higher rivalry was again related to higher depression severity after treatment, which can be understood as a purer response to treatment. And in the group that was treated with psychoanalytic interactional therapy, we did not find this relationship. So the treatment with PIT appeared to be just as effective for patients throughout the entire narcissism spectrum.
And I have to ask, how did you feel about this finding before, you know, thinking about the implications? How did you, was it surprising? What did it make you feel as CBT therapist? Was it disappointing or?
Definitely surprised us. It wasn't what we maybe wanted to find, but in the end, I mean, we thought about what could explain this this finding, and I think we came up with a few really good ideas about that. So actually, it was kind of nice to find something that we weren't expecting.
If I may add to this, Maike, I actually still remember the moment. I actually still remember the moment when you presented these findings to me, and you know, oh, it was like Maike had this presentation of the initial analysis, and she was like, "Oh well, it's rather difficult, you know." And I did not find consistent results across these two samples, and I don't know how we can deal with that. And then we were thinking about it, and in the end, we came up with, well, maybe that's even more interesting that we don't observe the similar pattern. I mean, why could that be? What could be the explanations? Because they are fundamentally different psychotherapeutic strategies. So actually, in the end, I think this was really like a very, very decisive and very interesting moment. And I think this is what fascinates us about research. You know, you don't really get what you expect in the first place. And in the end, these are the moments where you can really come up with new ideas and maybe find some very interesting things to follow up on in future studies.
Yeah, it's ideal in some ways to have created research that allows you to be surprised. You've already alluded to that you came up with some ideas to explain why this difference might have occurred between these two types of psychotherapeutic approaches. So what do you take these findings to mean then about why there was this difference and what this could mean in terms of how psychotherapy could or should be approached for people exhibiting high narcissism?
We thought about what is the difference between these two treatment approaches, because well, we expected that the treatment might be the factor that made the difference. And one of the ways in which psychodynamic therapies such as PIT differ from CBT is that the interaction between the patient and the therapist is focused on much more explicitly throughout treatment. So in PIT, the therapist employs something called the responsive method, which means that they constantly mirror their own thoughts and feelings back to the patient. And this might be an effective strategy for treating people who score high on narcissism, because it may promote self-reflection about how the patient's behavior affects others, which could also help them in interpersonal relationships outside of the therapeutic context. And this is interesting in the context of the therapeutic alliance as well, which we already talked about a little bit. So we hypothesize that the mechanism behind our findings may lie in the therapeutic alliance. And to investigate this a little bit further, we looked at the therapeutic alliance in our CBT sample, and we found that this detrimental effect of narcissistic rivalry that we initially found after treatment was mediated by the therapeutic relationship. So that means that when the therapeutic alliance is good, patients throughout the narcissism spectrum can benefit equally from CBT treatment. This is good news for CBT therapists, I guess, because therapists may benefit from focusing on building a strong and durable therapeutic alliance with their more narcissistic patients and keep working on this relationship throughout treatment to improve psychotherapy outcomes in this population, regardless of what kind of therapy they offer.
Do you want to briefly say what therapeutic alliance is, just to fill in that piece of the puzzle?
Yeah, well, it means, we measured this with a questionnaire, and some of those questions are, my therapist and I work on the same goals, my therapist understands me, or from the therapist's perspective, I feel like my patient likes me, I feel like we agree on what our goals would be, and we took a mean measure from the therapist's and the patient's perspective. In general, it's just agreement about goals, feeling respected, feeling like we have a similar strategy and what we want to achieve together.
Very interesting. So a really interesting piece of research, how you tried to untangle what might be happening. So if we think about, you know, you just mentioned how within the CBT sample, you looked at therapeutic alliance, but not in the PIT sample, because I don't think you weren't able to look at that. So that comes back to how the study was designed. And so it's an interesting study. It's a very naturalistic study, which comes with different aspects to it, right? It can bring huge advantages in a naturalistic side, but it also brings challenges as compared to a randomized controlled trial. What made you approach this topic in this way?
Yeah, I think it's a very relevant point. And you're absolutely right in saying that naturalistic studies pose challenges compared to randomized trials. I mean, first and foremost, of course, it's more difficult to control for confounding variables and make sure that the effects we find are actually brought about by the variables of interest. However, on the other side, a major problem in many clinical studies and also in RCTs in our field is that they are based on rather homogeneous patient populations that are not representing the true heterogeneity or diversity in our real-world clinical populations. And like we talked about earlier, we were interested in identifying predictors of treatment response that may one day be clinically useful, which means that they actually are of predictive value in real-world populations. And this is why we chose to conduct this naturalistic study, as you said, which was based on mostly digitally acquired data from all available patients, largely without exclusion criteria. And our idea is basically to use samples and populations that are as closely similar to the clinical reality and diversity as possible, in order to identify predictors that are immediately useful for real-world populations.
Yeah, and this is as you mentioned, this is one of the key challenges for RCTs, the difficulty of generalization. And then you might find something very interesting for within the RCT, but it's that the ability to move it outside the RCT that's a challenge, whereas in your study, you're already outside. But then it brought those other challenges of, you know, unfortunately, you weren't able to assess the therapeutic alliance in the PIT group, which would have been so interesting in the context of what you did find.
Absolutely. And I think that you can really regard both approaches as complementary. I think we need both.
Yeah.
And in this case, our focus was rather on the generalization aspect, but I completely agree, of course.
So we heard a little bit already about the broader context of your research, Niels, in your group. What's next for you both in terms of this line of research and how this fits into your other projects? Where are you moving on to from here?
I think one very concrete question that we're interested in is actually how do these findings or this association, this relationship, translate to the long-term outcome? Because, you know, as we mentioned, what we have been doing is to investigate how narcissist traits actually affect depressive symptoms during treatment. We would be very interested to investigate how they actually affect mental health and the long-term follow-up in everyday life of our patients. So one thing that we want to do in future studies is actually to combine our naturalistic approach with ecologically valid monitoring of mental health depressive symptoms, for example, by using smartphone-based monitoring, and in that way to really assess the long-term development of mental health and depressive symptoms. And this is a project or an idea that both our colleague Mitya Bak and we are our group are working on right now. And I think this is really also a reflective of the possibilities that we have with the new technologies, you know, using digital assessments to really monitor mental health at high temporal resolution with high ecological validity in everyday life of our patients. I think this is really interesting, and we have already some preliminary findings here, which we might be happy enough to present in the upcoming months. And I think there are other ideas. Mikey, maybe you just want to comment on what I just started to explain.
I think this is something that we want to look at throughout the psychiatric populations, not just specifically regarding narcissism, but specifically for narcissism. We are starting to look at how these traits are related to other experiences patients might have made. We want to see how narcissism is related to childhood maltreatment, for example, because both factors are related to psychopathology and poor treatment outcomes. And then another idea that just came to me because we talked about the therapeutic alliance would be to see how the therapeutic alliance develops throughout treatment, because we have those data from the beginning of treatment throughout until the end. And I think that would be really interesting to see whether narcissism is related to either a slower development of a stronger bond, or maybe a disagreement between the patient and therapist perspective about the therapeutic alliance. I think that would be a really worthwhile project as well.
Yeah, that sounds interesting, to look at therapeutic alliance over time and see also, I don't know what kind of granularity you'd have, but if you could look at breaks, could be interesting breaks in the alliance. So going back to what Neil said, that's really interesting that with time, you're sort of zooming out and zooming in at the same time, like looking for a long term, but also looking at this moment by moment changes. It's very interesting to use both of those scales. They're both so important to understand what's going on. And then as you mentioned therapeutic alliance, I'm curious, because you said how, you know, in some ways it's disappointing to see that in CBT, the therapeutic alliance is in some cases not so strong effectively as in PIT for people with narcissistic traits. And I know the commentary that we had on your paper, the editorial in your paper, made the point, you know, not all CBT is the same, and there are some types of CBT that do also more echo back the effect on the therapist. Has this study made you reflect on also not just recommending one type of therapy over another, but on reflecting how CBT is working or different versions of CBT. What has it made you think in terms of how the Therapeutic Alliance could be focused on within CBT for people with narcissistic traits?
Well, it definitely made me think about the kind of CBT we offer in inpatient treatment, because a big part of the sample is inpatients. And I believe that the kind of psychotherapy we offer is sometimes quite basic within those settings. And I believe in like outpatient care, we are able to focus on the Therapeutic Alliance much more, because we see the patients more frequently for a much longer duration. We have the opportunity to build up these relationships much, much better. And then also it made me think about, well, the need for individualization and just tailoring treatment much more to the individual needs of the patient. I don't know if in PIT that is possible a little bit better, I'm not sure, but in CBT sometimes I feel like we have this blueprint of how a treatment should go, and we just do exposition, for example, with anxiety patients, and it's not tailored to the individual needs of the patient as much. So that's something that I thought about when evaluating these results.
That is really one of our hopes, that this piece of research of ours could help to put a focus on, you know, customizing psychotherapy also for depressive patients. And I mean, it's just, if you think about it, it's so easy to accomplish. I mean, we're talking about a questionnaire, an assessment for narcissism that just takes 6 questions. I mean, it's not a lot to do this assessment, or it's not time consuming. And as Micah said, I think most of the therapists really actually do know that there are patients that really benefit from a more explicit focus on the Therapeutic Alliance. I was actually very happy to see Jan-Philipp Klein writing the editorial. He's a very dear colleague of mine. And as Jan-Philipp, I'm also a CBEST therapist. And I just want to say, of course, there are new developments in CBT, such as CBEST, that is explicitly focusing on the Therapeutic Alliance. And I think some patients just really need this explicit focus. And what we have to come up is with customized therapy that is really, you know, adjusted to the individual needs of the patient. And I hope that our study just shows it might be possible. And I hope that this might stimulate further research in this domain.
Well, as we'll slowly start to finish, is there anything that either of you would like to add?
We did not really discuss a lot the opposite patterns that we also found, and I think that this might also be a very interesting note, because you know, if you talk about narcissism, most people will say it's kind of a bad thing, it's a bad trait, you know, it's in general it's negative. And I think it's also interesting, if you look at our research and the research of our colleague Mitya Bak, to see that narcissism is a very complex phenomenon that is actually based on opposing dimensions, and that actually the, you know, not the rivalry, but the admiration dimension also comes with some positive aspects. And we also found that in our study, you know, that actually the depressive symptoms were less severe. And this is in line with many other findings from Mitya Bak and colleagues, to show that this is a complex trait, and that it's not as easy to say narcissism is just a very bad personality trait or something. And I think we really need more research that actually takes into account the complexity of personality traits. And in this way, I'm very happy that our classification systems are developing and are moving away from this, rather dichotomous view on either you have a personality disorder or not.
Yeah.
I just think it's not really helpful for clinicians.
Yeah.
I think that's a really important point. Yeah. I like to keep that in mind as well when I see patients who appear to be more narcissistic, that in a way, we can use this as a resource as well, and they can find this out about themselves and learn how to apply this in their day-to-day life, because it's not just bad and it's not just a hindrance in therapy. It's something that we can frame differently and look at how they can apply these strengths that they bring about to feel better and to deal with their symptoms. I like this as a message maybe for therapists as well, that they don't shy away from treating narcissistic people.
Yeah.
And think about how can I use this to their benefit, really.
No, I just wanted to say, and actually, you know, another problem that I can see is that for a lot of patients, it's very, very difficult and stigmatizing if they have the diagnosis of a personality disorder, especially of a narcissistic personality disorder. So I think this concept is also more helpful for patients to actually, it's more balanced, but it's also more helpful for patients to actually accept their individual components that they bring into therapy. This is also one point.
To say, oh, I have some of these traits, but it's just one aspect of me. Yeah.
And you know, all of us have traits.
Yeah, exactly. And all of us have had these traits, and you could look at, you know, there's, as you said, there can be a healthy narcissism, you know, the drive to go out in the world and do your, I believe I can make this change, or whatever it could be, you know, I have a vision, that kind of thing, to sketch a rough picture. But yeah, I really like your emphasis to focus on resources. And this is often so helpful within a therapeutic context, to look at how can we use this as a, how can we find the resource within this, and then maybe add with other tools as well. Well, I think thinking in terms of resources and addressing and taking away stigma is a really nice positive note to end on. So let's take a pause there. It's been a really interesting discussion, and I really enjoyed the paper. So thank you for sharing that with us, and for giving your time to talk more about it with me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for
thank you very much for the opportunity.
Yeah. So for our listeners, you can read Micah and Niels's research online now at thelancet.com. Thank you to both of you once more for joining me. And thanks to everyone for listening to this episode of In Conversation With. And remember, you can subscribe to In Conversation With The Lancet Psychiatry wherever you usually get your podcasts.